You're listening to English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, number 53. This is English Cafe, episode 53. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. On today's cafe, we're going to talk about elections in the United States. This is the time of year when we have our elections, some of our elections, for our representatives in government. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how that works here in the U.S., and as always, we're going to answer several of your questions. Let's get started. Be sure to visit our website at eslpod.com, where you can find the learning guide for this podcast. You can get a list of all the words that we use and their definitions, as well as additional words and definitions, culture notes, and a complete transcript of this episode. Our topic today is elections in the United States. This is how we select or pick the people who lead the government, or don't lead the government, depends on your opinion of them. We have two kinds of elections. The first kind of election is what we call a primary election, P-R-I-M-A-R-Y. A primary election is an election to vote for the person who's going to represent a particular political party. In the United States, we have two major political parties, two large political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Someone who is in the Democratic Party is called a Democrat, and someone in the Republican Party is called a Republican. And each of these parties gets to select or choose who is going to represent them for the second kind of election, which is called the general election. So the primary election is when you choose the representative from each party, and the general election decides who will actually win that particular office. We call the positions in the government, like the president, the vice president, the governor, these are called offices. And when you win an election, usually a couple of months later, you take office, meaning you start your job as that elected official, that elected person. We have a primary election in the United States, and usually these are in the spring or the summer. And then we have general elections that are usually in November. The traditional day for the general election is the first Tuesday in November. Now, this is not a holiday. This is not a day that you get off work. In some countries, elections are on Sunday, or people get off work for the election. That is not true in the United States. The day of our national elections or our state elections or our city elections are not holidays. The general election, I said, usually is the first Tuesday of November. We have, as you know, three parts of our national government and three parts of our state government. The executive part of our government is the president for the national government, or the governor for the state government. We also have representatives, individuals that come from different parts of each state. or from different states. And this is the legislative branch of government. Legislative, L-E-G-I-S-L-A-T-I-V-E, means that they are the ones that decide on what the laws are going to be. In the U.S., in most states and nationally, there are two parts of our legislative branch. There's the Senate, S-E-N-A-T-E, and there's the House of Representatives. The senators are smaller in number. There are fewer senators. On the national level, there are two senators for every state. So we have 50 states, which means we have, that's right, 100 senators. In the U.S. House of Representatives, we have 435 voting representatives. And those come from different parts of the state, in different states. The bigger states like California, Texas, New York, the larger population states have more representatives. The small population states have fewer representatives. The national elections are held every 4 years for the president. So our last election was in 2004. Our next election will be in 2008. But we also have elections, what we call midterm elections, M-I-D-T-E-R-M, all one word. A midterm election is an election in the middle of the four-year period for the president. So 2006, 2010, those would be midterm elections. And in the midterm elections, we have two kinds of elections. We have elections for the House of Representatives. All of the House of Representatives have to be elected every 2 years. So your term of office, that is the length that you can stay in your office after you are elected, is 2 years for the House of Representatives. For the Senate, it's 6 years. So every 2 years, all of the 435 national House of Representative members have to be elected. For the senators, we have 100 senators. We break them up into three groups. So a third of the senators are elected every 2 years, and they have 6 years in their term of office. So this year, about 33 or 34 senators will be elected. The elections in the United States are usually ones where you go to a certain place and you cast your ballot. Your ballot, B-A-L-L-O-T, is the piece of paper or the computer screen, I guess nowadays, that you use to indicate, to say, I want this person, I want this person. That's your ballot. The verb to cast, C-A-S-T, your ballot, is one that we use when we talk about elections. The people who are trying to be elected are called candidates, C-A-N-D-I-D-A-T-E-S, plural. A candidate is a person who wants to be elected to a certain office. The place where you go to cast your ballot is called a polling place. Or sometimes we just say the polls, P-O-L-L-S. A poll or a polling place is a place where you go to cast your ballot. And in the U.S., those are usually in schools or churches. They are temporary places where you can go and vote. In some smaller communities, people even have polling places in their garages so people can come and vote. But mostly it's schools, churches, other places, public places where people can go and vote. In many states, including California, if you are going to be gone on the day of the election, you can cast your ballot by mail. Now in California and a few other states, even if you're going to be present in the state on the day of the election, you can vote by mail. I, for example, now do all of my voting by mail. So the government sends me my paper ballot a couple of weeks before the election, usually I think a month before the election. And then I fill it out and I have to mail it by the day of the election. And if I mail it by the day of the election, then they will count it. That is becoming much more popular because, of course, it's more convenient. You cannot vote on the internet, however, though some people would like that to happen. The qualifications for voting in the United States are pretty simple. You have to be 18 years old. You have to be a citizen of the United States. And in some states, you have to be someone who has not committed a serious crime, hasn't done anything serious wrong. Sometimes in some states, if you are in prison because you are a criminal, you've done something wrong, you've broken the law, you do not have the right to vote. But generally speaking, if you're 18 and you are a official citizen of the United States, you can vote. There are no tests that you have to take, no taxes you have to pay to vote. It's free to vote. In many states, such as California, where there are people who speak different languages, we actually have ballots that are bilingual. That is, you can see the information in Spanish or Vietnamese or Korean or Chinese or Armenian, depending on the people who live in that area. Not all states have bilingual ballots, but many do. One more term that you might be interested in learning about is something that became very popular in the last election. Actually, I think it was probably in the 2000 presidential election. And that's red state and blue state. If someone says, I come from a red state, that means they come from a state that is Republican. If they say they come from a blue state, that means they come from a state where most of the people are Democrats. Now, why red and blue? Well, on the television stations, when we have a presidential election, an election for our president, if a certain candidate wins the majority of the votes for that state, they put the color either blue or red on the state, and they show a map of the United States on election night, and you can see which state voted for which candidate, for which political party. Why red and blue? I'm not sure exactly. Those are just the colors that the television stations picked to represent the different parties. So now we say that we have red states and we have blue states, and that means that we have Republican states and Democratic states. The U.S. in some elections has very low voter turnout. Turnout, T-O-U-R-N-O-U-T, means the percentage of people that could vote that actually did vote. In our presidential elections, I think it's a little over 50%, which means that almost half of the people don't go and vote. And this, of course, is a problem in many places where we have people who don't actually go and vote. Now let's answer a few questions. Our first question today comes from Juan, J-U-A-N, Luis, L-U-I-S. Juan Luis is in Mexico. He wants to know the meaning of the expression, she proved me wrong. To prove, P-R-O-V-E, someone wrong means that you show them that they are incorrect, that they have made a mistake, usually by giving them some evidence or some proof, we would say, P-R-O-O-F, that someone did something wrong. So, for example, someone says, I think the capital city in Minnesota is Minneapolis. And someone else says, no, no, you're wrong. This other person gets a map and shows it to you and says, see, it's not Minneapolis, it's St. Paul. I have proven you wrong. I have showed you why you are incorrect. Our next question is from Alexis, A-L-E-X-I-S, and Alexis is in Tibet. His question has to do with the difference between the words E-F-F-E-C-T, effect, and A-F-F-E-C-T, effect. Well, it's a good question, and it's something that is often very confusing, even for native speakers. Generally speaking, we use the word effect, E-F-F-E-C-T, as a noun to mean something that is a change, something that has changed because of some cause. Someone did something to change something. So you would say, the weather has an effect on me, meaning the weather has changed me. Or one effect of the election this year is that we will have higher taxes. Means one consequence, one result of the election. That is effect with an E used as a noun. Effect with an A, A-F-F-E-C-T, is usually used as a verb. And when we say effect, we are saying that something has an effect on something else. So the weather affected me means the weather changed me. Notice that we use effect as a verb to mean to change, and we use effect with an E to be a noun meaning a change. So it can be very confusing. Now, to make things even more confusing, sometimes you can use effect with an E as a verb as well. But generally speaking, when we use effect with an E, we use it as a noun meaning a change. When we use effect with an A, we use it as a verb meaning to have an effect, to change something. So thank you, Alexis, from the beautiful region of Tibet for that question. All the regions, of course, are beautiful, not just Tibet. Our next question comes from Zolti, Z-S-O-L-T-I, in Hungary. And Zolti wants to know the meaning of the expression to wait on someone and to wait for someone. When you say you are waiting on someone, usually you are in a restaurant or you are somewhere where you are helping someone else. The person who takes your order and brings your food in a restaurant is called a waiter, W-A-I-T-E-R. The verb is to wait on. He is waiting on you, means he is taking care of you. He is providing you with service. To wait for someone means that you are sitting somewhere and you are expecting someone else to come. That is to wait for someone. So I told my friend I would wait for him at the mall, at the shopping mall, at 3 o'clock. So I go to the shopping mall at 3 o'clock, and I stand there, and I wait for my friend to come. It is sometimes possible to use wait on to mean something similar to wait for, especially if you are waiting for an answer to your question or the results of a test. And depending on what happens, you are going to act one way or another. You're going to do something. I, for example, call the doctor and ask her what happened to my blood test. And I say to my friend, I'm waiting on the results to see if I need to take some more medicine. So I can't make my decision until I hear the answer. So in that case, you can use waiting on in a similar way as waiting for. But typically you wait on someone in a restaurant. If you work in a restaurant, you are taking care of them. You wait for someone means you are standing or sitting or in a place expecting someone to come. Our next question comes from Andreas in Berlin, A-N-D-R-E-A-S. Andreas wants to know the difference between big and large. Both big and large are adjectives usually used to describe the size of something when it is a size that is more than normal or more than something else. For example, you can say, this dress is too big for me. It is a bigger size than I need. You could say, the dress is too large for me. There really isn't a difference in meaning. If there is a difference, it depends on the particular item or thing that you are talking about. I don't think there is a general rule about that. If I'm talking about a vegetable, like a tomato, I may say, this is a large tomato. You could also say, this is a big tomato, but I think large maybe would be a little more common in talking about, say, vegetables or a piece of meat, some sort of food that you eat. When you're talking about clothing, you can use either big or large, but again, I think large might be a little more common. If you're talking about an idea, it's usually more common to use big. So someone says, I have a big idea. That means I have an idea that will require a lot of changes, something that is going to have a big result or a large result. We would probably not say think large, although you could. The more common expression would be to think big, or I have a big idea. So it depends on the noun that you are describing, whether you would use big or large. Usually, though, you can use either one. Our next question comes from Francesca, F-R-A-N-C-E-S-C-A, in Italy. Francesca wants to know the meaning of the expression, I'm fine, F-I-N-E, and I'm good, and I'm well. If someone says, how are you? Do you say, I'm fine, I'm good, or I'm well? Well, all three of these expressions are popular. When you say to someone, I'm fine, usually that means that you're okay, that there's no problem. If you say, I'm good, that means that you're not just okay, you're better than okay. You're feeling pretty good, for example. How you doing? I'm good. I'm good. When you say, I'm well, usually people use that expression when they are talking about their health. Someone may say, how are you feeling? You say, well, I'm well. I'm no longer sick. Again, those are general uses. You may hear people say, I'm fine, when they mean they're doing very, very well. But all of them are popular. And depending on exactly what you are trying to communicate, you may use one versus the other. I'm good is a little more informal. Some people think it's ungrammatical, but it's very common, and you will hear it often. Well, I hope that you're good, you're fine, you're well. That's all we have time for on today's Cafe. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.